We should have at least 30 visits for Lotus Sutra, because there are historically like 28 chapters. This is the introduction, and then we'll have to have a conclusion. So since we meet maybe 2 Mondays a month, you'll be here all year. So settle in. So, I put together a short summary about some of the key teachings, Lotus Sutra, called Many Paths, One Result. So I'm going to read from that, and I'm going to be very Lotus Sutra-like. So that means, like, you should say to somebody you know, hey, I'm doing this. You know, like, what are you doing Monday nights? I'm doing this. So that that is in line with the Lotus Sutra, that we delight in spreading it, doing it, worshiping it, putting it in stupas, and telling people what we're doing. So I just want to read that out, so if there's a typo, then we'll find it. The Lotus Sutra is a collection of stories of the lives and deeds of the Buddha and many bodhisattvas. Some of the core teachings of the sutra are very practical on using skillful means and active involvement in bodhisattva activities to save all beings, and imagination and insight to see exactly how to do it in a way each being needs. They're highly inspirational, with an awe-inspiring message of universality, that although there are many paths, they all lead to the same result, Buddhahood for all beings. The stories are often fantastical. That's a word, right? Okay, good. Even miraculous, but they're grounded right here in the conventional world. One example is the parable of the burning house. There's a man with 3 children, and one day he comes home to see that his house is on fire and the children are still playing inside, unaware. Hammering on the door, he calls to them to please get out quickly, but being children, they ignore him. He tells them how much danger they are in, that they'll be injured badly, and they still don't listen. Despite all the efforts to gain their attention, he doesn't. Terrified for their safety, he searches for a solution that will save them. Finally, he tells them that if they will come out of the house, he has 3 toy carts, one pulled by a sheep, one by a deer, and one by an ox. They flee the house, escaping by different routes, but when they come out, they see their father is only given 1 large cart, pulled by a white ox. He tells them that they may have this larger, more elaborate cart, and they're very happy. In the sutra, the Buddha explains that the burning house is samsara. He himself is the father, and the children are all of the sentient beings who are too lost in samsara to hear him warn them. The story shows that he had to use his imagination to think of different ways to try to tempt the children to come to safety. All of his attempts to save them are the bodhisattva activities we practice to try and rescue beings. He uses insight to understand what each child specifically wants or needs to escape the 3 carts, which are the 3 paths to Buddhahood. He uses skillful means, persuading the children into action by offering what they believe they desire and giving them something even better. By giving them the last large cart, he shows them that though they took different paths, they lead to one result, Buddhahood. Because these paths all lead to the same place for all the children, the message is truly universal. This parable shows that the Buddha isn't some remote, distant entity. The eternal Buddha is actively right here, and his help is personalized and immediate. We aren't alone on the path. He is always present and available to us, reaching out and responding to our cries, prayers, and questions. The Buddha and all the bodhisattvas in countless universes are there to help us. But this grand vision is not meant to encourage us, just meant to encourage us. It is also meant to energize us so that we can see the entire road of possibilities, that we can change this world into a Buddha field. These stories aren't merely about being a good person. They're about being courageous and undaunted in our service to others. They teach us that we as human beings have an extremely rare opportunity to be bodhisattvas and to practice and teach the Buddha Dharma. It is a call to action to make the world a better place, not just through individual practice, but out in the world itself by seeing all other beings as Buddhas. It inspires us to use imagination and insight to see what is necessary to save sentient beings and to practically use our own skillful means to help them in exactly the way they need. In short, to transform the entire world through bodhisattva activities. These stories aren't just for our knowledge, but also our participation. They're meant to help us create a pure land in this world or country or community. The central message of the Lotus Sutra is truly heroic, inspiring, and absolutely universal. No matter who you are, human or animal, rich or poor, good or evil, Buddhist or non-Buddhist, no matter which path you follow, each and every single one of us, without exception, has innate Buddha nature. Simply put, it tells us that every single one of us can become a Buddha and liberate all sentient beings right here and right now in this very lifetime. Essentially, it is a guidebook to awakening. And then at the bottom, suggested that we use the translation by Gene Reeves, which is fairly readable, and his commentary, The Stories of the Lotus Sutra, both with Wisdom Publications. Actually, all the translations are fairly readable. Peter's shaking his head. Yeah, but generally, most people would agree that the sutra needs a commentary. And in fact, in all the Dharma traditions, we'd always read sutras or talks, especially even tantras, with a commentary. And the commentary is an oral transmission. So it isn't just reading. It's also hearing and reciting, memorizing, worshiping, propagating, copying, like that. There are people, probably still, but definitely in China and medieval Japan, who would copy the entire sutra in gold kanji, actually. I think the Threefold Lotus Sutra, the inside pages, you know, like that. So at one point in my practice, I did copy out the 25th chapter a couple of different times. Doesn't take that long, actually. This is the chapter on Kanon or Kuan Yin Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. So that's still possible to do. It feels good in longhand, you know. I never did learn enough kanji. But, you know, copying out, it's also very traditional. So this is something if people say, well, what are you doing these days? I'm doing this. This is very Lotus Sutra-like. Like, oh, you know, this might be helpful. This is what we do here, like that. Which is a little different, you see, the little different energy than just saying, oh, come and see what we're doing. You see what I'm saying? You're going, Lotus Sutra is like, oh, we're, you know, here's something. This will be helpful. Instead of saying, well, if you want to, come visit sometime. Do you see the difference? You know, it's a little bit like here, you know. So, you know, it's like jumping the gun a little bit. It's not pushy. It's just like I'm doing something, you know. If you're interested and want to hear about it, which is different than just saying, you know, come and visit if you like. We do both, you know. So don't worry, we're not going to be knocking on doors or going to airports. you know. We're extending ourselves. That's the point. We're extending ourselves, saying, you know, I'm doing this practice. It's helping me be happy and free, and here's what I'm doing, you know, which is also something that people are interested in. They want to know. They want to have what we have too. So bodhisattva activity is like kind of jumping the gun. So I think we only printed up 25. Yeah. Did we find a typo? Maybe a little grammatical, yeah. Little grammatical change. Yeah. Okay. And the ancient world, they did not have movable type. Woodblocks started in China. So they invented the paper. The Tibetans picked it up from there. You had to in Tibetan or Chinese, you have to carve all the characters backwards, right? Print. Can you imagine? Yeah. So, big deal. So this this Gene Reeves one, maybe you can find it used now. Lotus. And then his commentary, like this one. Yes. Oh, good. Yeah, be a techie. Yeah, totally. Yeah, be a techie. Yeah, get it. That's good. But there probably there may be 10 translations, you know. Just to be scholarly, some of the original translation, the first one actually in English, is from the Sanskrit version. And but the most translations are actually from the Chinese version. There was a very famous translator, Kumara Jiva, that journeyed from India into China and did probably the most famous translation, and that's based on this one. Translators were highly regarded in China and Tibet too. They were called in Tibet Lotsawas, eyes of the world. Okay, but I just have a story to tell about Kumara Jiva, because real Dharma talks always have a lot of stories in them. Lotus Sutra wasn't the only text he translated. Of course, he didn't translate them alone. You know, he had, you know, Chinese had already also learned Sanskrit and also learned his style of Hindi, whatever that was, right? So, because people didn't really speak Sanskrit. So there was a team, so it was a translating team, but he was obviously the master and the head. The emperor at the time was so pleased with Kumara Jiva that he effectively made him a palace kind of prisoner. You know, like, you're not leaving, you know. No, you're not going back. But that wasn't all. The emperor believed that it must have been something. He wanted to keep the translation team going, you know, into the next generation. So guess what he did? He kind of forced, I'm not sure whether they actually married or what, but he forced Kumara Jiva to have a son. Thinking like, well, this guy will grow up like his dad and pass on the translator gene. And I'm not sure what happened with that, you know. I know. Kind of makes sense, but so I think Kumara Jiva really gave it all for the Dharma, don't you think? Yeah. So, but it's really quite something to learn ancient Chinese to translate. So, you know, even picking up a book of a translation, we should think, oh, this is amazing, right? It's amazing that we can have this. So to be totally traditional, we'll just read a little bit. So I'll read a little bit out loud so that you have the oral transmission, because generally the oral scene is, we're not going to read, I'm not going to read the whole chapter. There are various ways to translate. Lotus Sutra is just kind of nickname, shortened. Usually it's like something like the wonderful Dharma of the, you know, teachings of the lotus flower, or the sutra of the lotus flower, the wonderful Dharma. But Sadharma is like the wonderful Dharma. Pundarika is like white lotus or the lotus. So already the title, like he basically translates it as the sutra of the lotus flower of the wonderful Dharma, or the Dharma flower sutra. So even the title becomes sacred. So that's why, particularly in China and Japan, you know, people are just sing the title. And in Tibetan too, the titles are actually usually fairly long, and themselves people would just venerate. So we don't actually do it. For Heart Sutra, but we could, you know. So Heart Sutra, I know I'm skipping around for people that are, this is, the title is Arya Bhagavati Prajnaparamita Hridaya Sutra. So we actually don't translate the whole thing. And that's because Arya means like the noble, Bhagavati lady, is sometimes translated, you know, the wisdom gone beyond Heart Sutra. So it's homage to the noble lady Prajnaparamita, right? So sometimes people would chant out the title too. But here we do it kind of the Heart Sutra, the perfection of wisdom. But it's literally Arya Bhagavati. So you're singing the praises of Prajnaparamita, and we have her you know, picture at the end of the Heart Sutra. with the Lotus Sutra, it's very unique because we're chanting or celebrating the sutra itself. So the sutra, the teaching itself, has a holy resonant quality to it. So even saying the name of the sutra, just like saying the name of a Buddha, has that quality of sacredness. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So if whatever translation you have is okay. So, but the first chapter, Jean translates as virtuous conduct, and it always starts with Ananda's recitation. This is what I heard. At one time, the Buddha was staying at Rajagriha on Holy Eagle Peak with a large group of great monks, 12,000 in all. 80,000 bodhisattva great ones were also there. There were gods, dragons, satyrs, centaurs, asuras, griffins, chimeras, and pythons, in addition to all the monks and nuns, laymen and laywomen. There were great wheel-turning kings, minor wheel-turning kings, golden wheel-turning kings, silver wheel-turning kings, and other wheel-turning kings. There were kings and princes, ministers, and people, men and women and great elders, each surrounded by followers numbering in hundreds of thousands. They went up to the Buddha, worshipped at his feet, circled round him 100,000 times, burned incense, and scattered flowers. After making various offerings, they withdrew and sat to one side. The names of those bodhisattvas included Dharma Prince Manjushri, Dharma Prince Treasury of Great Majesty, Dharma Prince Treasury of Freedom from Anxiety, Dharma Prince Treasury of Great Oration, Maitreya Bodhisattva, Leader Bodhisattva, Medicine King Bodhisattva, Lord of Medicine Bodhisattva, Flower Banner Bodhisattva, Flower Light Banner Bodhisattva, King Incantation Freedom Bodhisattva, Regarder of the Cries of the World Bodhisattva, Great Power Obtained Bodhisattva, Constantly Persevering Bodhisattva, Leader in Valuable Signs Bodhisattva, Accumulated Jewels Bodhisattva, Valuable Cane Bodhisattva, Above the Threefold World Bodhisattva, Vimavahara Bodhisattva, Fragrant Elephant Bodhisattva, Great Fragrant Elephant Bodhisattva, Lion's Roar King Bodhisattva, Lion at Play in the World Bodhisattva, Lion's Powerful Quickness Bodhisattva, Lion's Perseverance Bodhisattva, Courageous Power Bodhisattva, Ferocious Lion Bodhisattva, Adorned Bodhisattva, and Magnificently Adorned Bodhisattva. In all, 80,000 such Bodhisattva great ones were there. Of these Bodhisattvas, there is none who is not a great leader who has attained the Dharma body. They have attained the precepts, concentration, wisdom, liberation, insight into liberation, tranquil and meditative, and constantly in a state of concentration. They are calm and peaceful, not attached to actions or to desires. Completely free from perversity and distractions, their minds are calm and serene, free of bias and unrestricted. They have remained this way for billions and billions of eons, and all the innumerable gateways to the Dharma have appeared to them. Having obtained the greatest wisdom, they can understand all things deeply, completely understanding the reality of the nature and characteristics of things, clearly distinguishing their ontological status and their relative strengths and weaknesses, and make clear the revelatory quality of reality. Moreover, knowing well the abilities, natures, and desires of all, with incantations and unobstructed eloquence, they obediently and skillfully turn the Dharma wheel of the Buddhas. First, they have small drops of moisture fall to dampen the dust of desire, and by opening the gateway of nirvana, fanning the wind of liberation, and ridding themselves of the heat of worldly passions, they bring about the cooling quality of the Dharma. Easy. Yeah. So the entrance into the realm of the Buddha is completely different than you know, what we normally think of as ordinary reality. Where we, you know, in ordinary reality, 80,000 bodhisattvas would not fit on, you know, you know, Eagle Peak or Vulture Peak, depending on your translation. So we know right away we're leaving attachment to ordinary vision and entering the vision of the Buddha. And this is one of the most important aspects, is that the Lotus Sutra is bringing out the cosmic nature of Buddha nature. That it isn't just a limited viewpoint. It's a whole cosmology. And kind of American-style Dharma, I call it, we like to think, okay, you know, we're just going to be simple, and it's just about not messing up the world and being a good ordinary citizen, and it is, but we're also citizens of the galaxy and the cosmos. So the Lotus Sutra expands our idea of practice and expands our idea of responsibility beyond our ordinary lifetime, beyond our ordinary world vision, to the point where everyone here is undergoing, everyone in the sutra, meaning also everyone reading the sutra, is undergoing a cosmological size transformation, and everyone's practice has a universal transformation energy. So just by reading, reciting, being interested in, propagating, practicing the sutra, believing in it, doing the bodhisattva activities, we're doing cosmic activities. This is important because so many times in America we feel like, well, I'm glad I'm doing my practice, I'm becoming a better person, and I'm not, you know, making things worse, and maybe I'm doing some local help, but basically we're going downhill, and it's getting worse, and the bad guys look like they're winning, maybe after last week's vote, you know, maybe not, but, you know, very pessimistic idea, right? Even though we might be doing all these wonderful practices ourselves, we're having kind of this is, you know, the Lotus Sutra is like really unbelievably positive, and all the chapters are hammering that point home from every direction. No, the bodhisattvas are actually doing the activities of the Buddha, and they are unlimited and without parallel. So probably historically, the Lotus Sutra became popular, will be traditional and say, of course, the Buddha taught it during his time, but it became extremely popular when people were getting depressed about Dharma. When, even though there were many practice centers, the monasteries or the practice was not able to affect change in the environment. So it wasn't just that monks and nuns were wasting their time or being haughty or something, which the Lotus Sutra also criticizes if that's the case. But probably historically at a certain point, particularly in India, people felt that the Dharma wasn't making an impact in society. It wasn't bringing about the transformation in society that that was wanted by the Lotus Sutra followers. So in addition to the universality of the teaching, the cosmic nature of the teaching, particularly in China and Japan, and to extend in Tibet too, the Lotus Sutra is an engaged Buddhism sutra. The Lotus Sutra suggests, exhorts, celebrates, and commands us to do something to work with our actual situation. So in China and Japan, many, and in Tibet too, many of the social movements associated themselves with the Lotus Sutra. And it became a socially active, making real change kind of sutra. In some cases, you know, political parties have organized around the Lotus Sutra and so forth. It doesn't expressly talk about political things in the Lotus Sutra, but it talks about building a Buddha field. And it talks about actually making this very place Pure Land. It's easy, right? Okay. Not always easy, you know. So just in the Lotus Sutra, two very famous passages. Let's see if I can remember my notes. A quote from Jean's translation. There's great merit in propagating the sutra in the face of great difficulties, spreading its teachings to others despite many obstacles, leading others to embrace it. And there's long passages about the difficulties that come to those that try to make change, try to change themselves, and the obstacles they bring about, the persecutions if possible. So far, you know, like here in the West, at least for you know, new Buddhists coming out of the 60s, you know, white Americans, we haven't experienced persecution, but Japanese Buddhists during World War II were rounded up, right? There could, you know, so sometimes when we read these passages, we go, well, why would anybody want to, you know, persecute, right? Why would anybody want to shut it down? It happened in India, happened in Tibet, happened in China, happened in Japan, you know, so happened here, right? Still can, right? We had just bought the temple, and the second day I was going around the temple, and there was a nice couple of big swastikas on the back of the temple. I thought, well, maybe that's auspicious, you know, because we're like, you know, Buddhism and in India, you see nice swastikas. You know, but it's a reminder that, as the Buddha said himself, Dharma goes actually against the grain, right? It goes against the grain. So I don't want any persecution, but also I know that people practicing Dharma here, sometimes we're in, you know, we have to make choices in our jobs. We have to make choices to be away from our family or friends or partners. You know, it's not always that if people are partnered up, everyone's doing Dharma together, right? You have to say, I'm doing this, I'm not doing that. You have to, you know, practice. You have to give up time. We just have time and space, right? So, you know, there are people, just even ones love us, go, you know, I don't see any change in you. Or, you know, you've gotten worse. So it's rare in the sutras to have a sutra, a teaching, to directly talk about the difficulties of practicing Dharma. It's rare to have a sutra that talks about how difficult it is to teach. Usually in many of the sutras, even the Pali sutras, in the Prajnaparamita sutras, Flower Garland, the Buddha's teaching, and everyone goes, hey, that's great, we got it, you know, and people go, hey, I want to take refuge right now, you know, and all that, right? So the Buddha's teaching, and everyone thinks it's fantastic, and, you know, Lotus Sutra, we talk about, and the Buddha, you know, says, okay, these are difficulties. Some of the bodhisattvas in one of the chapters that we'll read, thousands of bodhisattvas come out of the earth. And, you know, they say, how is your health? Are people listening to the teachings? Are you becoming weary? You know, so, you know, we know that the Lotus Sutra is very real about what it is to do Dharma practice, what it really, it's also very real about what it is to teach and be a bodhisattva. It doesn't have illusions that everyone will initially say, hey, that's great, good, you're practicing Dharma, fantastic. No, sometimes they go, I have no idea what you're doing. You don't seem to be getting better. You're leaving me alone while you go off and be with your friends. Your habits have changed and you're not even better then. You know, like, so it's not like throwing us in jail, but we deal with those difficulties. They're real. So we want to take a short break, but now it's time to make some initial comments, questions, requests, or complaints. Those two. That's all right. How many people have the book already? How many people have the book? Yeah, okay, that's good. How many people are going to get one of the Lotus Sutra books? Yeah, good. How many people have time to read during the week? Okay. So, the reading the sutra is seen as a meditative practice. So when we're reading it, we're not reading it like you're reading, you know, this is not a college course, right? So you want to read it, and then until you just feel like that you can, it's almost like eating a meal. You don't want to totally get bloated, right? You want to read a little bit, and then, you know, close your eyes and let it sink in. You want to read it and feel that you're there actually hearing the teachings. We're not reading it for information, because it's not that kind of sutra. You're reading it as if, which you actually are, you're right there where the Lotus Sutra is being taught. So that's the kind of magical, imaginative, but actually true piece, is while we're reading the sutra, the Buddha is actually teaching and taught at the same time. Everything is happening simultaneously. So while we're reading the sutra, the Buddha's teaching at Eagle Peak, where Bodhisattva's listening to it. We've always been here, and we always will be here, you know, in this place of Buddha nature. That's what's happening. It is cool. Yeah. So reading it is, you know, a meditative practice in itself. So you read it like that. We're not scouring it like... I don't think... There are a few footnotes in this translation, but very few. Yeah. So when you have Lotus Sutra also... it's traditional. You might in Tibet it's traditional. I'm sure it came from China too, because it's always Chinese brocade. You would wrap the sutra up in nice cloth, put it up, you know, somewhere. Usually, like, you know, of course I've been to Japan, but it's probably the same, but traditional Tibetan teachers, they'll just go completely nutty if we leave a book on the floor. And I know we can't help it sometimes, but, you know, with a core text, you always wrap it up and put it up. You don't put your coffee cup on it. And, you know... You can imagine, like in the old days, where it was just a piece of paper from a wood block, and if you messed it up, you would not get another one. So, you know, we put the, you know, so it's very traditional. You might even put it up on your altar, something like that. Generally, in altars like here, I don't know, I can't see behind me now, but. We would have, you know, maybe Heart Sutra or Prajnaparamita Sutra, you know, Lotus Sutra, just something. There's always a Dharma text like that. Yeah. Question, comment before we take a break. Renee, hi. Yeah.
Names, like very, like,
Usually, in traditional societies, not just Indian or Chinese or Japanese, the name is tried to convey the essence. So that's why when we do the refuge ceremony, you know, you get a name, right? So everyone in my lineage gets Yeshe to start with, you know, and then maybe a different name like that. And if you sometimes take other impairments and things like that, then you might get different names, but then you're supposed to kind of embody the name, so to speak. Yours would be she who asks questions. Yeah, so, you know, these are, in the Lotus Sutra, these are probably even short the way they would do it in ancient India, you know. Yeah. Okay. Should we take a stretch break and then come back and do a meditation on Lotus Sutra? Do people need to stretch? I'm just going to sit here because I have a nice comfortable chair now. I'll just stretch my legs and you can stretch yours. Susan said, this doesn't sound right, you know, when I was reciting. Usually, it's traditional, in actually Japanese system, maybe Chinese, that there are two small sutras at the beginning of the end. So started with that, right? So I'll start at the actual Lotus Sutra, the page 33. And I'm going to read it a little bit because it's somewhat the same. But the meditation when I stop is I want people to, you know, pick a name and be there. So the meditation, you know, I'm going to read this amongst the nuns there, and then while we're reading through it. You're going to pick a name that appeals to you, and so you can be there. So an important piece in Lotus Sutra isn't like, well, that, you know, that bodhisattva had that name, so I can't be that bodhisattva because they own it. You know what I'm saying? No, but in Lotus Sutra, we can pick it. I'm just laughing because I've given refuge many times, and with a couple of times I've given the same Dharma name to people. And one of the people came up and says, well, that's my name. Well, that's the whole point. We can have the same name. Okay. This is what I heard. At one time, the Buddha was staying at Rajagriha on a holy eagle peak with a large group of great monks, 12,000 in all. All of them were arhats, without faults, free from afflictions, self-developed, emancipated from all bonds of existence, and mentally free. They included Ajanta, Kaudinaya, Mahakashapa, Uravilva Kashapa, Gaya Kashapa, Nadi Kashapa, Shariputra, Mahamagalyana, Mahakatyana, Anarudhi, Kapinya, Gavampi, Ravata, Pilandavasta, Bakula, Mahakastila, Nanda, Sundarananda, Purna, son of Maitreyani, Sabuti Ananda, and Rahula, such great arhats are all well known to everyone. In addition, there were 2,000 others, some in training and some no longer in training. The nun, Mahaprajapati, was there with 6,000 followers, and the nun, Yashodhara, the mother of Rahula, with her followers. There were 80,000 bodhisattvas, great ones, all free from backsliding in the pursuit of supreme awakening. All of them had mastered incantations, taught with delight in eloquence, and turned the irreversible Dharma wheel, made offerings to countless hundreds of thousands of Buddhas, planted many roots of virtue, were always being praised by Buddhas. Having trained themselves in compassion, they could enter into Buddha wisdom, deeply understand great wisdom, and reach the other shore. Their fame had spread to innumerable worlds, and they were able to liberate innumerable hundreds of thousands of living beings. They included Manjushri Bodhisattva, regarder of the cries of the world Bodhisattva, great strength Bodhisattva, constant effort Bodhisattva, never resting Bodhisattva, jeweled palm Bodhisattva, medicine king Bodhisattva, bold alms giver Bodhisattva, jeweled moon Bodhisattva, moonlight Bodhisattva, full moon Bodhisattva, great power Bodhisattva, immeasurable power Bodhisattva, above the threefold world Bodhisattva, Vajrapala Bodhisattva, Maitreya Bodhisattva, accumulated jewels Bodhisattva, and guidance Bodhisattva. And all 80,000 such Bodhisattvas, great ones, were there. Also, at that time, were Indra, king of the gods, with his followers of 20,000 children of heaven, plus the children of heaven, rare moon, universal fragrance, and jewel light, and the four great kings of heaven with their following of 10,000 children of heaven. There were children of heaven, freedom, and great freedom, followed by 30,000 children of heaven. Brahma, king of heaven and lord of this world, was there, as was great Brahma Sikkim, great Brahma Bright Radiance, and others, along with the following of 12,000 children of heaven. There were also the eight dragon kings, Nada dragon king, Upanada dragon king, Sagara dragon king, Vasuka dragon king, Takshaka dragon king, Anavatapta dragon king, Manavish dragon king, and Utpalaka dragon king, each with several hundred thousand followers. There were four Chamara kings, Dharma Chamara king, wonderful Dharma king, wonderful Chamara king, great Dharma Chamara king, and upholder the Dharma Chamara king, each with several hundred thousand followers. In addition, there were four centaur kings, pleasant centaur king, pleasant sound centaur king, beautiful centaur king, and beautiful sound centaur king, each with several hundred thousand followers. There were four Asura kings, Balan Asura king, Karaskanda Asura king, Vimachitran Asura king, and Rahu Asura king, each with several hundred thousand followers. Four griffin kings were also there, great dignity and virtue griffin king, great body griffin king, great fullness griffin king, and thus willed griffin king, each with several hundred thousand followers, and King Ajatashatru, son of Videha, with several hundred thousand followers. Each prostrated himself at the Buddha's feet, then withdrew and sat to one side. And all the different concentrations and samadhis that the Buddha manifests in Lotus Sutra, they're all active and do something. So a lot of times when we think of samadhi or shamatha or meditation, we think of a peaceful state, of course, but generally a state where we're kind of in neutral, right? Generally, that's the metaphor, kind of in neutral. Here, we're in gear. So, the samadhis and the meditation are extroverted in that sense. But the important thing to take home tonight is to understand that we participate in the life of the Buddha, the life of the Lotus Sutra, and by reading it out loud, hopefully a little bit to yourself or somebody you're with, or even read it silently, we are activating the Dharma activity and participating in this timeless activity. That's very important to identify with that at the very beginning, that you are there and that the preaching is going on continuously. So it's not like, well, we're reading about something that happened in the past, but that we are participating in that now. And, pick It can be a secret name. You don't have to tell anybody. But, you can pick, a bodhisattva name, that you can work with for the sutra. That's nice, isn't it? Yeah. It can change, too. You can say, well, this week I want to be this, bodhisattva full moon or like that, right? That can change, too. So lastly, the central symbol, of course, is lotus. So the nice part about being to India, see these huge lotuses that are much bigger than you'd see like at the Deyang Museum in the old days, the little lotus pond here. They have these big kind of seats, so you could really see Buddha sitting on lotus. But the lotus arises out of the mud and comes out fresh. But a caution is that it's not like the lotus leaves the mud. The lotus remains rooted in the mud. So particularly in lotus bodhisattva practice, we get our hands dirty in the daily life of the world. We get muddy, right? We're connecting the muddy world and, the world above. So the stem is the connecting. It's not like, well, we came from mud and transcended mud. No, you've got your roots in the mud. Okay, so, even Buddhas and Dharma teachers, have to go to the restroom, right? I remember one time, even when Jada Rinpoche was here, one time he cut short. He said, well, okay, I'm going to take a break. Just walked right out. people, can they do that? Aren't they supposed to, hold it or something? That's important. We have to stay in the mud to help beings. We can't just be floating up here. But we connect them through the lotus stem. Easy. Okay, closing prayers now.